Blog Talk Radio.
We're shy of one horse.
You brought two too many.
welcome to another Hump Day special on Soul Tree Radio and The Raw. I'm your host, Michael Lewis Ingram, and as always, it is good to be with you. Soul Tree Radio and The Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and the Brother Man Network. Get the who, what, when, where, why, and how right here, right now, at www.BASNNewsroom.com. Shout out to the members of the Brother Man Network who will be coming here and then and popping by to add to the discourse. Radio Reggie, Pat Freeman, Mighty Oba, Professor Fred, Patrick Farrar, my brother T-Mac, hopefully, and as always, the bad man from the East Bay, Gary Norris Gray. What up, G?
We have a situation. I want people to wake up. Seriously, I want people to wake up. We had a bank failure in the Bay Area last week.
Yeah.
Another bank went under 2 days ago.
Okay.
Another bank went down in Europe today.
You talking about Credit Suisse?
Y'all better wake up. In 1929, Sandy happened one after another. The only difference in that 1229, and right now, 100 years later, is that the FDIC is back in these banks. Now listen to me, listen to me carefully here. Once the FDIC runs out of money, guess what? Game over.
How you feel?
Up everywhere.
Well, but we already know that there were a couple of banks who went down. Silicon Valley went down. Signature went down. And Credit Suisse, which is a large European bank, is tottering. But is it really that bad, Gene?
Yes, because it's called a domino effect. And right now, right now, the FDIC is banking it. So there's no problems.
Okay.
Once the FDIC, like I said before, once they lose all their money, that's it. Game over.
Well, we already know they got away with scamming the banks, all the money they had lost through bullshit, and saving the ass financially in 2008. Where that's going to go down the stairs. Well, whether that's going to go down the same way 15 years from now remains to be seen. But one thing is for sure. When the money gets funny, everybody's in trouble. It sounds like, as we speak, what we have to do about now is the future of everybody who has cash in a bank and the mini banks. Like, they said that Silicon Valley, at the time it went down, was the 16th bank to go down.
So when you put first the write down the another paper, if you look the good, the copy here. You understand?
All right.
I don't want to hold
I'll take some barbecue, Gene.
Yes. Okay, I'm going. Later, I Okay. You call me, okay? Because I...
I'll take some barbecue and a side of kimchi.
All right, man. What do you got? What do you got?
Well, it's more like what you got. Sounds like dinner came.
Yeah, it was Uber.
How was the
Uber
weather
dinner?
Out there,
yeah.
By the way? I meant to ask you earlier. How was the weather out there, by the way? It was looking buck wild from what I saw this morning.
Today is the first day where we really saw the sun.
Okay.
Michael, I'll tell you, God wrath is acting crazy right now. What I mean is that we had 3.5 inches of rain. Past 5 days and 75-mile-an-hour winds.
3.5 inches of rain.
We got trees coming down left and right. This is. I don't know how to explain this, but I've been in California 45 years. I have never seen anything like this.
I heard that. Well, why are you sitting there enjoying your barbecue and kimchi?
Thank you.
Consider this a food for thought. Well, before we go there, we have to say better days to one Dick Fosbury, the master of the Fosbury flop.
Yeah.
In track and field.
He was a very good guy.
Yeah. When I first saw Fosbury jump, I freaked just like I think a lot of people did. And then you realize styles and how they are done really set the tone for innovation in sports. I can't say that Fosbury was a trendsetter, but he did what he did his way, and he got it done. So if you get it done, it don't matter how, as far as I'm concerned. And Fosbury managed to get it done. However, as you're sitting there eating, we're saying better days to one Otis Taylor. Otis Taylor, who was 80 years old.
Yeah.
And it seemed like it was a long time since he made that move on Earson McBee in Super Bowl IV and scored that touchdown that cemented the win for Kansas City. But think about this. In Super Bowl III, we know certain people collected their money and said, thank you, you have guaranteed that the league financially will be strong for years to come. And you had to sit back and think, well, wait a minute, years to come. This is a one-time deal.
The Kansas City Chiefs and the New York Jets saved the National Football League. What was that? I can remember this. In 1988-89,
right.
National Football League was the big ogre.
Right.
The big owner. All the old guys that were 45 or older loved the National Football League.
Yeah.
They were talking smack. I mean, real smack.
Right.
They were going to kick the ass out of behind.
Right.
Joe Davis put an end to that. Now, I look. I televised match now that I'm not doing it, man. But what the New York Jets did was, as you say, guarantee the AFL survival.
Right.
Because if Joe Davis had lost that game, the AFL would disappear.
You truly believe that?
Oh, yeah, it would disappear.
Well, let me ask. We got Radio Reggie on the line. Reggie, if the Jets had lost Super Bowl III, what do you
yes,
think
sir.
Would have happened? What do you think would have happened to the NFL?
Well, the fix was in. I mean, years ago, the late Bubba Smith was in a taxi cab, and they said, we knew we were going to win. Talk about the Jets.
Okay.
And you had a young man. What was the young man's name that wrote a book about how they could fix NFL games?
Right. That's right.
What was his name? Bud Grant or something like that?
No, it wasn't Bud Grant. I know
remember the young man's
about.
Name?
It's the same guy who played defensive back for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah. There was so much money to be made where they merged the two conferences.
Back in the day, it was 5.3 million, which was a lot of money back then.
Yeah, and see, my thing is Joe Namath was the poster boy, and now we got A-Rod coming to the Jets, allegedly, because the deal had not been signed yet, alleging Aaron Rodgers. But what people don't realize is that, in my opinion.
Reggie, if Aaron Rodgers, I'm telling you this right now, if Aaron Rodgers goes to Super Bowl this year, I'm done.
Well, you're going to be done, because I can tell you right now, the Jets ain't going to be all that good. I mean, because one thing, they're going into a loaded division, and number two, A-Rod don't want to get out there and work with his receivers. So Solomon is going to be the fall guy for this, another black coach.
Why is he going to New York? Why is he going to New York? I don't understand this. Why would he go to a raggedy team like the New York Jets? They're raggedy.
Well, I'm telling you, man, the NFL is fixed. Anytime they can come with news, Mike, when upstage the NCAA basketball tournament, they are ruthless. I mean, John Morant get 8 days suspension already served, and barely anybody talks about it because they're talking about the NFL.
Yeah, John Morant, that's heavy. And our colleague Patrick told us last week that he was going to get it. We didn't know how hard he was going to get it, but he was going to get it. And now, 8 days, it seems like it's harsh, but it's nothing compared to how much money apparently John Morant has potentially lost with the suspension. But to get back to what we were talking about as far as the AFL, people forget the Kansas City Chiefs were 13-point underdogs to the Vikings.
All right.
Everybody believed that the Vikings were going to crush Kansas City. That's
right. They needed the Baltimore Colts.
And everybody believed that the game, the Jets win, was a fluke. And there's no way Kansas City could come in and do to Minnesota what the Jets did to Baltimore. Well, they were wrong on both counts because of a 6'3", 215-pound man from Prairie View A&M named Otis Taylor. Otis was the first of the big receivers. I mean, legit big receivers. He was fast. He was wiry. But he wasn't speedy fast. He was one of those where if he was even with you, If you're even, he's leaving. And he was a long strider. He was strong, could fight off the jam, and he did a lot of the same things that we saw guys like Chris Carter and Terrell Owens later on be able to do. Now,
Owens was a big man. He was big. And those defensive, there's no way a defensive guy could cover him because he was so big. He was huge.
Well, he was huge. He was 6'3". He was 6'3", but he was great size. And the NFL wasn't used to guys that big. You know, everybody was pretty much dealing in a 6-foot frame and playing and performing as such. Taylor was genuinely big. He was genuinely rangy. And he was a good target with good hands, which is even more important. For all that he did, when he came in the middle 60s, Kansas City wasn't expecting him to be as productive as he was early on. He's a 5-time AFL Pro Bowler. He once averaged 22 yards a catch in a season. Now, for his career, he averaged 16 yards a catch. That meant that he was a possession receiver that was also able to go deep, which was important. But get back to the game. This was the same as Doug Williams and Washington beating Denver. If you look at the team, Kansas City had it all over Minnesota. Their offensive line was better. They had those big offensive linemen, Hyde and Mike Garrett, and those little backs. They were bigger on defense. Their secondary was much better. And they had Taylor, and they had receivers like Frank Pitts and Gloucester Richardson. But Otis Taylor was the serious X-Man. He was the guy who played over in the end position when it was called just end or split end. And he made life a living hell for McBee because he couldn't cover him. As a matter of fact, the catch that he made looked very much like the same kind of catches and the same kind of pattern that Terrell Owens had run when he played really well in the loss to the New England Patriots. Having said all that, when it was all over, Kansas City emerged victorious. And the league said, what you going to do? So they said, let's be partners. And from the AFL, we went to the American Football Conference. And teams were added to create a balance. But Kansas City knocked it out of the park. And there was no way that the NFL could recover. But where I'm getting at is this. The NFL beat writers were angry at the very fact that they couldn't match this. Every year, they rated who made Sports Illustrated, who was all-league this and all-league that. And here, the Kansas City Chiefs had killed the notion of the NFL because it wasn't just a victory. It was a clean, clear-cut victory. Kansas City, as the professors coming in, had demolished the notion of what Minnesota tried to do. Professor, I can honestly say that when Kansas City jumped on Minnesota, they stayed on them, and they never let go. And good evening.
good evening. You have a pretty good memory because it's really been a few years. And I'm sure you're talking about the passing of Otis Taylor.
Yep.
And he along with several of his teammates, are Hall of Fame caliber, about half the guys. You know, we can go back and look a few years downrange and talk about how many guys that played for the Steelers and the Cowboys in those 2 years, along with several others, but how many Hall of Famers were on the field at the time they played. And then you look at not just Kansas City, but even that team that moved every 2 years called the Raiders.
Yep.
Same kind of situation. You had a bunch of Hall of Famers there. Some are in, some of them aren't. And the tragedy is most of them are suffering the fate that Taylor is suffering. L.C. Greenwood is the prime example. Fortunately, Donnie Shell finally got in, and several others in recent years, especially in the last couple of years, now that it's quick to be looking out for HBCU, alumni. But, you know, the tragedy is too many of those guys are going in into the Hall of Fame in a box. And I said many years ago, realistically, most Halls of Fame, especially football and basketball, should be shut down and forgotten, because too many people who should be in are not going in. And the reason they're not going in is you got a bunch of buttholes who don't know, but they got a vote. And it's just like watching the election, the political elections. When I hear some people and their reason for choosing certain candidates, their time is, only in America, because realistically, somebody that stupid shouldn't be allowed to vote. But, you can't hold them back because, they've got a right to vote. My problem is be an informed voter. You don't know how many people come to the polls, and I've worked the polls for the last 30-plus years.
Mm-hmm.
People will come to the polls and ask you, who should I vote for? One, I can't tell you because I ain't going to jail.
Yes.
Two, if you don't know who to vote for, why are you showing up? I mean, it's not like,
not
it's
about
not,
that.
You know, it's not brain surgery. Same thing with these guys who have a vote on who goes into the Hall of Fame. Inform yourself. You know, just inform yourself. That's all you got to do.
You had three guys. I had a man in the Bay Area, and Bubba Gizan, they will never vote for Barry Bonds. Why? Because of steroids. Any moron would know that Barry Bonds was all before steroids.
Gary. Here's my take on those morons that you're talking about who say they won't vote for Barry Bonds. They should be kicked off. When they make a public statement like that, they should be kicked off their voting rights should be taken away, because they're showing prejudice. First of all, but I take you back to the era that we're talking about. McGuire, Barry Bonds are two of the most out there kind of people with that kind of thing. If steroids were so bad, why were they not against the rules of baseball? First of all, why weren't those rules enforced by baseball? Second of all, and three, if you can't hit, literally, if you can't hit
singles, you can hit home runs. So go back and look at these guys' batting averages. You know, so to me, and you know, I mean, you know, think about it. McGuire, Frank Howard, and a few others are the only guys who were really big-time home running hitters that weighed 200-plus pounds. Hank Aaron didn't.
Nope.
Willie Mays. You know, go down the list of some of the best. I looked at this some years ago, and I want to say out of the top 20 home run hitters of those at that time, and this has been a lot of years ago, but of the top 10 home run hitters of that time, most of them were, they may have been on the tall side maybe, but most of them were small. They didn't weigh too. You didn't have to worry about none of these cats playing linebacker or defensive end. They were 6 feet and under, and
yep.
most of them weighed 180, 190 maybe.
Right.
So, you know, we're not because the. If it were football, it would be even basketball, it would be a different scenario. But I don't see where being stronger does not really supposedly being stronger does not really help you be a better hitter. And being a home run hitter, I mean, you just gotta have timing. Time, you know, as a pretty decent hitter myself, timing is more important than power.
Everybody made it very clear. If you can't see it, you can't hit it, okay? If you can't see it,
true.
It ain't going nowhere. And as these guys, these morons who don't understand the game, and they get it right to do that, I mean,
but Gary,
come on, man.
Gary, there's something you're missing in this. As far as baseball, as opposed to football then, there was no comparison. Baseball had its own argument, and it said its own standard. When it came to football, it wasn't just putting them together for business reasons. It was, wait a minute, the American Football League, they've got their own guys. The National Football League, they've got their own guys. And we're established, just like you said, this status quo. Nobody's going to look at the New York Giants the same way they would look at the New York Jets. But what made the AFL scary was that every team in the American Football League had the potential to whip anybody's ass in the NFL. And I mean anybody, even Denver, I would say, had to be the weak sister of everybody in the league back then. Every AFL team was formidable. I mean, the Chiefs made clear. The Jets had won when they had made their point. The Raiders, they were on their move as far as being the team in the league. Buffalo had won two titles in the mid-60s. They were formidable. New England, Houston won the first two titles. They were all solid. Everybody had solid components that, if you look at the future, everything spelt the AFL becoming the AFC and becoming dominant. Because this is 1970. The Miami Dolphins were yet to form their perfect team. Pittsburgh had yet to form.
Mike, you're overlooking one elephant in the room. Remember, it was the AFL who went out and got black players, especially for teams who were more to the south. And
well, I agree. The NFL
was slow to make that move. They did go after some guys from the northern schools because you had people like Carl Eller, Bobby Bell. Both of them were North Carolinians. They went to Minnesota.
Okay.
You know, they went north to play. A number of others went north. Bubba Smith was another one. He's from Texas, went north to play. So, you know, it gave the they would go after those guys, but they wouldn't go after the guys from the black schools below the Mason-Dixon line, pretty much. And back then, you know, and then you did have the exceptions they made, say, like with Maryland, Eastern Shore, Morgan State, mm-hmm. schools like that. But the reality was the teams that are now in mostly NFC, with the exception of remember the only one of the team that crossed over when they made it to the AFC was Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and somebody. There were three teams.
Baltimore.
But see, you know, but remember now, while Baltimore was quote unquote a quote northern state, because it was north of Boston, of Washington. The reality was the only reason that the Maryland was not in the Confederacy was the fact that Lincoln gave them a bye when it came to doing away with slavery, allowing the amendments to count to count everywhere from
three states.
But Maryland was given a pass because if Maryland had joined the Confederacy, D.C. would have been surrounded.
I agree. But the X factor here in divulging the breakdown of the AFL and the NFL was that the beat writers were going to make it difficult for the American Football League players, not AFC players, to get proper recognition. And that's what caused the bigger problem. You know, it wasn't about players just being good at their positions. It was about the NFL saying to the AFL, how dare you? Yeah, you may have beaten us on the field, but we're going to beat you in print. And if you look at how many guys have gone to the Hall of Fame since the 1970s, you can count the number of AFL players on less than two hands. Think about it. You have Kansas City and their area of success. You have Miami and their success. You have Pittsburgh and their success. And even though there was representation by some of them, and I'll throw Oakland in there, they didn't get the number of players in the hall that they should have gotten in the hall. That's one reason why the book Four Quarters of Soul was written. There were players that we know were good enough to be in, who they wouldn't make an argument for. And the proof of the pudding is the fact that Snake Riley made the Hall of Fame last year. Last year, almost 50 years later, they recognized him from the initial play of the Cincinnati Bengals. 50 years later, only two Bengals, Munoz and Riley, are in the Hall of Fame. And Cincinnati's beat writers prove they're full of shit. And not only have they proven they're full of shit, the NFL Network has proven they're full of shit. Think about it. ESPN, we know they're full of shit, so we don't even take them into consideration. But here comes the NFL Network. Well, you know, we're all dedicated to football, and everything is football this, is football that. And they made a real big deal about the Super Bowl, Good Morning Football, and all this other bullshit. Come time to recognize these guys, and everybody's quiet as church mice. You would think somebody like Otis, his numbers would jump out and then he would get his justice. Wasn't even close. they're so busy talking about which team is A-Rod going to play for, as opposed to the reality of, well, shit, who's next? How can we take care of Elster Greenwood? How can we take care of Tommy Nomas? You know, they weren't even thinking about it. And this is the NFL Network we're talking about. They were all collectively from the Jets.
Well, Mike, you know, the kind of stuff that I look at is this, you know, I understand that football and basketball are team sports, and you know the whole thing about team that we spend hours discussing. But at the same time, within the confines of those teams are individuals who, and I know that there are probably 50 or more offensive linemen from each league who should be in.
I agree.
Because nobody knows how to, well, very few of these people in question know how to grade linemen as far as their effectiveness and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, it baffles me sometimes how some of these people get in these positions. Because you look, you know, everybody's, well, he's a good blocker and this kind of stuff. But, you know, have you ever taken a time to just watch the pure speed that a lot of these offensive linemen have, you know.
Thank you.
You know, if you go back to the catch, the interception when the Pittsburgh, the 90, Harrison, when Harrison intercepted that ball and moving down the field. Do you realize there was an offensive lineman that came from the opposite side of the field who almost caught him?
Oh, yeah.
You know, he was running I want to say defensive backs or somebody, or a linebacker, brushed him and knocked him off balance. But there was an offensive lineman, and I want to say it was number 75. He came from the opposite side of the field. And almost caught Harrison. And those are the kind of things that made a lot of the guys that played at HBCU so valuable early on, because at an HBCU, you had that kind of speed. You could play offense or defense. At these big high schools, if you had that kind of speed, you automatically play defense. You had that kind of speed. And, you know, Joe Jones is a good example. You know, he's one of many that were bona fide sprinters because they had to take this class on the one at Temple, and he taught them how to run. And so we have one of the major problems that we're dealing with here is you have too many people who are ignorant by choice or ignorant by chance. Either one is an overbearing negative because they hinder us from seeing the good in the people who are out there. And just as a matter of fact, they happen to be in a position of being gatekeepers, you know, because that's the only area they can cover, and see, if you sit and listen to some of these characters, it's no different between them and the guys. And you know I haven't been to barbershop personally in 16 years other than dropping in, but I can tell you, I mean, we solve the problems of the world at the barbershop.
Yeah.
Okay. On average, most of the conversation in the barbershop has more to do with how fast or how loud you can say certain things than the actual matter of fact. And quite often, you know, as they report, is that a fact or is that fiction? Well, a lot of times it's fiction, but it's just how, you know, you know, if you and a chick get in the scene, you ain't gonna save it so much, okay?
Right.
Because you don't want to see your head rolling down the floor. But you know, you got these guys who hang out at the barbershop. You probably ain't seen them get a haircut yet, but they're always there. And I say,
yep.
You know, that same spirit has engulfed some of these wannabe journalists, because that's how they treat these guys. And see, they won't come out and say, well, I don't know because I ain't seen them play. I'm too young. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm 40 years old.
Right.
You know, and, you know, I mean, I attended a funeral Sunday of one of my schoolmates' mother, and the guy who preached the sermon was one of my teammates the year I went to school here in Fayetteville. And in conversation, we were talking about, you know, various things, and Rico's son was there, and I had never met him to know who he was. Anyway, he was asking me questions about his dad, and I said, yeah. You know, I said, I didn't really block for him, but I didn't play offense that much. He played running back. But I said, now, when he played defense, I had him covered because nobody ran my way anyway. So I didn't, you know, mm-hmm. he had nothing to do but run back and forth down the field. And, you know,
right.
it was sick as a joke. But at the same time, though, there are people who will take that kind of thing and, well, you know, he jumped offside at a crucial time. Who hasn't? Their whole idea of what good football or good basketball is so far out of touch with reality. You know,
see,
these are the people right here in North Carolina. We have this situation. Where there was this school called University of North Carolina, get involved in March Madness, but they lost 13 games. Well, they won 20. Yes, but they finished like 9 or 10. Basically, they didn't make it to the semifinals of the ACC tournament. Okay.
Okay.
They did not make it to the semifinals of. And they had 13. They had 13 losses.
Mm.
Well, they won 20 games.
Right.
Who are you gonna take out to put them in? And see, this year they were so screwed up. They finished the season. I want to say they lost 4 out of 5 or 4 out of 6 games at the end of the season.
Mm.
You know, and everybody's and see. What nobody, the elephant in the room is, this color boy is the coach there now. And when you know that never happened on Dean Smith, it didn't happen on the Roy Williams. Yeah, but part of his problem is he got players Roy Williams brought in that don't play the way he needed them to play. And it shows.
Yeah. The issue that infuriates me, Fred and Gary, is that you've got these people at NFL Network that you would think they know better. You know, we expect the mouse to be lacking, shall we say.
Michael.
Yes?
They do know better, all right? They want to copy the mouse. That's part of the problem.
Well, the problem is, it's a bad copy. You would think that, okay, if we dedicate ourselves to the NFL, we're gonna lobby to get it right. When we talk about the NFL, we talk about everything that makes the NFL work. And when they condense it in their morning show that they call Good Morning Football, whatever the hell it is, it's fluff. Now, I don't mind a little bit of fluff to keep things light, but There's no balance. It was all fluff, no substance, and eventually it went away from what it theoretically could have been. And that's exactly what happened back in the 70s. Back in the 70s, you couldn't say, well, who's the better offensive lineman? Randy Rasmussen, Tinglehoff. You know, it didn't matter. Tinglehoff was NFC, so you made the argument for Tinglehoff. Tinglehoff gets in the Hall of Fame and not Rasmussen. And I doubt if Rasmussen ever will get in. The whole point was he was being looked at with a different eye. Would Jeffro Pugh ever get booked in the Hall of Fame? No, but that was more because he was black rather than the fact that he played in the NFL. If Jeffro Pugh played for an NFL team...
The other reason you won't make it because every time you mention him, the first thing you're going to talk about is high school game and how he was blocked out of the play and
got
allowed.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, and what's lost in the mix is, you know, what's in Gil Cunningham.
Right.
The offensive block, the guard from the other team. I mean, Jerry Springer, that whole wedge there those are guys who are part of the NFL who are being screwed. Because look how long it took Kramer to get in the Hall of Fame.
Oh, yeah, I agree.
There's several others who should be, because see, these people play the gatekeeper role. They're more interested in keeping people out than people getting in. And then with that kind of mindset, why do you have a Hall of Fame at all?
Yep.
You know, I don't think it should be awarded. I mean, you know, I got in a discussion with a school that's down the street from me where some of the people, there is a major storm coming. And I have told them I will have no parts of it because I don't do business the way they do, you know, and all the other necessary things to keep these people off my net. But at the same time, yeah, though, they use their Hall of Fame event as a fundraiser. Now,
okay.
There are guys I've known who should be in there because I've been around there. I've been around their program since 1980.
Right.
So not too many kids are going to come through there that I don't know, especially with the major sports. But at the same time, though, it is so bad now that there are people who are in the Hall of Fame who don't even want to come to the Hall of Fame event because too many interlopers are getting in. And basically, I think the figure is 500. You buy a table, which is roughly $500 for 10 people or whatever it is.
Right.
If you buy a table, you submit information, the quote-unquote committee that's supposed to verify the information. And,
yep,
you know, there's one guy in particular who was in, and my major memory of him was the fact that he intercepted a ball against Winston-Salem State, and the only guy who truly chased him was an offensive tackle, and he beat him down the field.
Mm-hmm.
And even his coach, his frat brother, the only time he played was special team because he couldn't cover him up at cornerback.
Right.
But he makes a big deal about being a member of the Hall of Fame at Pell State, right? Yeah, but that's because basically you had $500, much more so than the fact that you were really good.
I heard that.
And see, fortunately, most of the Hall of Fames for the major sports, they have. Mm-hmm. proper things in motion in place to prevent that kind of, you know, being watered down that way.
Right.
What they don't have are a system in place where you have people who have no true regard for true knowledge of the game enough to provide legitimate people who should be in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what's the holdup on Doug Wilkerson? You know, you think about it. You have colleges and professional teams who still use film of him to show you how to block. So how good was he if that's the case?
And there are
others out there that, you know, who fall under the same heading. Once you have retired, you have reached a point where you are not going to ever get any better. You know,
right.
Fortunately today but you have film and a video that allows you to showcase certain things. You don't have to wonder.
Red,
you don't have to
wonder. What you're saying there is all good. But if we found out that Doug Wilkerson was a San Francisco 49er instead of a San Diego Charger, he'd be in the Hall of Fame by now. This is what the NFL beat writers were up to, because you had two writers theoretically from every NFL city making the case for their guy. And some years would be, well, my guy is up for eligibility this year. You know, why don't you help me get him in? I mean, it was a lobby. It was basically the smoke-filled room all over. Gary, was there ever a player that you thought, shit, he should be in the Hall of Fame by now, and it never happened, or was late happening?
Most of the guys I like are in. I can't think of one right now. A lot of Raider linebackers should be in, and they're not.
Well, see, did this thing spread beyond the fact that it was just Raiders? The Raiders were AFC. So was Pittsburgh. You know, so was Miami. For all the purposes, you had all these players who had AFC affiliations that were getting frozen out. Mary Little, Bob Kuchenberg. You know, Pittsburgh is a separate section for Pittsburgh about that. Houston, it hurt them just to give Elvin Bethea and Dr. Doom Brazil credit and get them in. They're very, how can I say this? It wasn't racism, as my man said in Any Given Sunday. It was placism. Their place was not secured because somebody else who had no idea about football was making the decision for them. And that was infuriating. And that kind of politics shouldn't fit the script.
I also feel that Pittsburgh, Baltimore, who's the third team that gave in them?
Cleveland.
Mostly teams that move in the AFL. The AFL? They got privileges and the other AFL teams are getting.
How so?
Baltimore and Pittsburgh, I think, are bad. Whenever they got somebody else, they became assholes.
Okay. Well, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, and Cleveland were competitive for sure. However, the fact that a Pittsburgh or Baltimore or Cleveland player was going to get the hard way to go from the committee when it was time to select for getting into the Hall of Fame. And that's where the problem is. You know, you have to depend on guys in some cases who never played trying to tell you how great they think you are. And there's no comment I hate more than hearing the Hall of the Very Good. What the fuck is the Hall of the Very Good? You either were good enough or you weren't good enough. And these assholes made it even more difficult because they couldn't properly assess who belonged in there. We got Patrick Farrar in the mix as well. Patrick, can you hear us? Well, Patrick popped out. We're going to get him back. But, fellas, that's what I'm talking about. You have this disparity when you have these people making these decisions and they have nothing to do with football. The problem. I think we got Patrick back. Patrick, can you hear us?
Am I black enough for you?
Yeah, you black
oh,
enough.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Only on the air.
How y'all doing?
We're doing all right. But we're in the midst of discussing the fact that the advent of the NFL Network has not made it better for players who aspire to the Hall of Fame because they're not looking out for the player. They are, in effect, gatekeeping. And we all know gatekeeping has not been a good thing. I see you popped out again, but, you know, without question, we know it's been a long time since players weighed on their own merit. Most of the people properly assessed can't do it because they don't look at it from a football standpoint. They look at it from a fan standpoint. If they did not play, it's even worse. And I'm not saying that women can't properly assess football talent, but I am saying their prejudices sometimes run a little harder than we can imagine. And it's made it difficult trying to decide, why are you here? Are you trying to tell me that you know who can play and who can't? Well, that, gentlemen, is a two-drink conversation.
See, Mike, what I would do is, okay, is ask them, okay, looking at the steel curtain, name the players from Division I schools that played in the steel curtain.
Yep.
Right. Not one.
Exactly.
Yep.
And see,
I agree.
Everybody look at Joe Green and say, well, Joe Green from that school was down there in Texas. North Texas State was a division, was the equivalent of a Division II school where he played.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Actually, it was lower than Texas Southern where, Texas Southern and Arkansas Pine Bluff were both SWAC schools.
Right.
They were Division I. They will be, by today's rating, they will be 1AA.
Mm-hmm.
So, what's all this yang about, guys? You know, you try to tell them, okay, you say the guys from the smaller schools are no good, but I give you the snake. He's from Florida A&M.
Yep.
Florida A&M was the equal, if not better, than Miami, Florida, and any of the other schools in the state of Florida.
That's right.
And I even simplify it this way. Okay. At the time that we're talking about, I think he graduated in 68. Wasn't hardly no black players that even were in school, in fight school.
Wasn't none.
Most of the schools that are the 1AA schools down there now were actually junior colleges back then. Okay? Mm-hmm. So if the best black players in the state of Florida were at Florida A&M or Bethune-Cookman, who were the best players?
Right. Right.
My dad told me a story about A&T. 1948. A&T played North Carolina in football scrimmage. A&T got 42-3 lead. 42-3 over the USC. They had three guys hurt. USC got three guys hurt at that game. USC has not played one guy since. Okay? There's a reason for that. They don't want to lose it. Now, here we are, 2023, and USC won't play one guy now. I guess they would.
Well, yeah, if you got your ass whipped like that, you have hurt feelings too. But there's a difference between getting butt hurt because your team got the ass whipped as opposed to an individual playing well period of time and is looking to have his career assessed.
This is what's wrong with America today. If they were honest, America's not honest. You want the NCAA bills right now. What do they do? They put black schools at 14, 15, 16 feet. Why do they do that?
We know that.
And we should not be taking it anymore. But why? Okay.
I hate to sound impatient, but you already know that. You know, this whole issue, what the AFL did, or rather what the NFL did, was particularly heinous because it was the worst kind of politics. It's like, you can ignore the fact that John Hannah is a great center. You know, he's playing for the wrong league. You can forget about Don Maynard or Dave Grayson or Hewitt Dixon or any of these other guys. They're playing the wrong league. So when it's time to assess them, fuck them. Daryl LaMonica, the mad bomber himself, he has the best winning percentage of any quarterback from the 60s to the 70s. He won 90% of his games. Do you think they even thought for a minute he belonged in the Hall of Fame? No. It's that kind of stuff we're talking about.
He should be in.
You know, this selective prejudice in picking stuff out. That's what I find annoying. And if the NFL Network really were the NFL Network, they'd be pointing that out and wouldn't have to write a book
about
expose that.
See, as a non-cable subscriber, I don't deal with such bootleg organization as the NFL Network. But from what I've heard of them, they are a bootleg copy of ESPN. They just started later.
Exactly. But why bother? when you can assess talent. The bottom line is, if you can't play, what you say won't matter anyway. But if you don't know how to assess talent, that will tell you everything about your organization. And there's no way Otis Taylor should be lying in his grave without the fact that Hall of Fame should be next to one of the accomplishments that he has.
Thank you.
That's not an admission. That's just straight bullshit.
Yeah, that's true, Mike. It's sad that Otis Taylor died and was not in the Hall.
Exactly.
The politics and how they run that those politics in three committees. I thought that at least maybe they get into the Hall of Fame, the Veterans Committee put it in, but it didn't happen. And it's a damn shame that he is not in.
Exactly.
But see, the problem is such a backlog. You know, if the snake just went in last year, that tells you how far behind they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see, and remember now, Snake was not the only one, because remember there was a time when Lamar Parris would play the other corner?
Yep.
Right.
You know, people like that. Well, he got slung on drugs. Being treated like he's been treated, yeah, I guess he did.
I mean, for the mere fact that it took Raleigh so long to get in, and they got Cliff Harris and all these other guys in going, wait a minute, stop, the Cowboys, stop. Mm-hmm. But again, knowing a little bit of how the process works, and I was exposed to it, I'm going, wait a minute, man.
Yeah.
You know, this is where I had the discussion. I think I told you about it last week a little bit. I had it last week when I was at Big East, and talking to some people who producers and folk who work with the networks.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the issues that are happening, and which we've talked about here, is the aspect of analytics and impact on the game.
Right.
And too much has been given to analytics, and it's happening. Like we're saying is what they're talking about. How do you get the situation where you want to present a perspective of an athlete based upon, there's going to be some analytics and numbers to it, but not to the point where it's analytics that feed into the programming of leading an athlete to be greater than what he is because he has the numbers and not knowing the impact of the games, which goes back to the idea of most of these guys don't understand a sport more than 25 years ago. So that's the problem.
You know, it's just like this argument. Now everybody wants to know who's your all-time top five.
It's
nonsense.
Yeah.
You know,
100%. Right.
And,
right.
You know, because see, everybody looks at the fact that, Kareem was okay, but he didn't hit enough three pointers. Well, for about half his career, there were no four things of three pointers.
Imagine how many points Sam Jones would have for three pointers. Imagine how many three pointers Jerry West would have for three pointers. Stop.
It's even worse than that, because one, they don't know the rules of the game. They don't know how to get. In today's environment. Oh, he slammed. Can you imagine? Just pick a name. Russell. Any center with any kind of backbone of that era, how many times would you dunk on them before you became part of the standard that held the basket up?
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Once, maybe.
Come on. You know, my family used to joke about how Shane would told him, don't come, don't bring that little mess in here no more.
Yeah.
He said, he made a big show. He made a verbal showing of him. Guess what he didn't do? he didn't drive the mill no more either.
I heard that.
Fred, remember when both chairmen say, when they come into office, expect to pay the price.
And see people try to degrade Chamberlain, and you know, and the same thing with Russell. He didn't score a lot. He didn't have to.
He have to. That's what we're talking about, Fred. His impact on the game was greater than numbers.
And speaking of Kareem, at what, 80-something, at almost 80 years old, I bet you Kareem could still shoot the hook shot and hit in a 50%. Because I think he was well over 70 when he was active.
He was.
And see, because it's not a pretty shot, they don't teach it. But I was watching the game, and I actually saw a guy throw up a skyhook, and it was nice.
It wasn't sexy, Fred. They said most players, when Kareem was with the Lakers for a couple, like 2 years, he's trying to, as assistant coach.
It didn't fit Showtime enough.
It wasn't sexy enough. He won how many scoring titles did he win? Come on.
Yeah.
How long did it take them to break his record? He had only 2 or 3 years where he actually had the 3-point shot. You know, remember now he played with that. He was a center.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't need a 3-point shot. He got three by the shot. You pushing? It went in, and then he got the free throw.
But Fred, you're getting to the essence of what the NFL is doing to Otis Taylor and all the AFL players. It was iteration, the worst order. You know, 1970, Kansas City's champion. Okay, 72, 73, you know, Dolphins are coming along. You know, Pittsburgh's starting to form their thing. You know, even a team like Houston, which never won, is putting together a strong team. And they give a Pittsburgh fit.
And Mike, how long did it take to get Robert Mazzillo Hall of Fame? Give me a freaking break.
Thank you.
See, it took over 30 years, and he was no better in year 30 than he was. I think you have to be out of the league 5 years. In year 30 plus, what made him better?
And I'm going to give another example. He's in the Hall of Fame, but when you hear conversations about linebackers, he's always an afterthought. We're talking about Lambert. We're talking about Dick Buckus, which you should. But they don't mention Lanier as much as he should be mentioned ever.
Exactly, because he was the first.
He set the pace with so much, and being in charge out on the field, you know, those kind of things. You're right. He does not get mentioned enough.
They don't talk about
don't even talk about the kind of stuff he's done since he left the NFL.
Yeah.
No, seriously.
If he should be doing.
They don't talk about Bobby Bell either, playing outside linebacker. Yeah. Bobby Bell was perfect, but they say nothing about him. And it's because he was an AFL player. You know, we hear too much of that NFL bullshit and the NFL hype about guys who couldn't carry their jocks. And we're not just talking about chop level. We're talking about guys who some would consider good, some might have been even considered great, but you place them next to the stats that
certain AFL players have, and it's not even close. I mean, aside from Larry Allen, I don't know anyone who's ever a good alignment as Art Shaw was. That's it.
Well.
You can't compare. But the NFL Network wouldn't dare try to make something like that because they'd be exposed for what they were, a shill. You know, just, how can I say it?
One of the problems that time with shows like ESPN and NFL Network, as well as the NBA and all those others, you got too many people who played in those leagues who were not that good to begin with. They're talking heads now. You know, in most cases, they're just glad to have a job.
Right. Well, Fred, think back on what you said, Fred. I think the NBA does a better job, particularly NBA Network, of getting some people who know what they're talking about. Isaiah's done a great job on NFL Network, on NBA Network. Because, as a matter of fact, here's what's happened, guys. I told you before that because of technology, various players have gotten their own website. And different video platforms on YouTube,
right.
And saying stuff that really, really is really good. Michael Cooper, of course, formerly with the Los Angeles Lakers, who should be in the Hall of Fame, quite frankly, he had a show. And I listened to it, and you recall a couple of weeks ago when J.J. Redick was crazy talking about some of the problems with the NFL. And who, based on his opinion, that's fine. Jerry West had to back him down, but Michael Cooper went in on him like he stole something. J.J. Redick, shut up. He said, as a matter of fact, if he was playing when I was playing, I'd asked the coach, John Gardner, and he wouldn't have scored. So who did he say something?
Yep.
I said, man, Michael didn't hold back, Jerry West held back a little bit. Dominique went on him, but Michael Cooper called him out because he wouldn't even get scored if I was playing him. I'd have asked for him.
There you go.
So some of these other networks are doing, like NBA does okay. NFL is based upon real politics, and it's going to get more political now in terms of opinions because you know who's coming on, not this year, but next year, the golden boy, Tom Brady. With a $337 million contract next year, not this year, next year.
Has number 12 decided he's really truly crossed his heart and hope to
spirit. He's gone. Fred, $337 million would have me retiring too. and I ain't got to get hit by nobody. Act like I'm still good. Come on. Yeah, he's here for he's waiting here before he comes on. But they're gonna carve a space out for him like no other. But we'll see what he says. I'm not before I judge. I want to hear what he says. So. And I'm by the way, I'm so glad this Aaron Rodgers talk is over right now. I don't know what to do. Give me a freaking break. He made up his mind today. He is going to play with this. Okay. Let's move to something else. Give me a break.
Who is he playing with?
Jets. He's gonna go visit. What it is that, and I can understand logistically what in terms of the business aspect of what has to be done, because there's some money got to be shifted around. Basically, balls out of this. The Packers want to play at least to nothing on his contract, and the Jets want to say you got to pay part of his contract. We'll take a big hit up, but you got to pay some. And the Packers don't want to do that. That's what it boils down to. That's why it took us so long.
Well, what makes them think the Jets are going to work? Because the Jets are Long Island's team. There's a certain mentality to play for the Jets, and it's not one that generates positive outcomes. I mean, his best years are behind him. And that's not to say he can't play. It's like You're going to have people cheering for you that will accept anything. It's not that they'll accept the winner. They're like, oh, we're just glad you're here. And then after you've lost 67 games, it'd be like, well, hell, get the hell out of here. It's the same thing they did with Brett Favre. He got there 10 years too late. And
yeah,
it's like,
I know about that.
Rodgers is going to rise 10 years too late.
Well, Mike, I'm going to tell you one thing. I'm not saying you're wrong what you said, but I will say this. With all that putting involved into it, particularly when Woody Johnson, who really goes anywhere outside of being an ambassador, flies to Green Bay getting to come. That's where I knew they had a chance to go get him. And now that they got him, he better win because he ain't in Green Bay no more. They'll talk about your mama here in New York.
You ain't lying. Oh, my
God. Evil last year. I mean, they're
going to
eat them for lunch.
You better win. Because, you know.
Well, if you don't, you can do the same thing the other quarterback's been doing.
You went wrong. Because they can't go back to that cat in the second string, number two. They can't go back to him.
You know. Yeah. If worse comes to worse, they can use Reggie.
Hey, Mike, can you hear me?
Are you going to back up? Are you going to back up Rodgers in New York?
We got Reggie on there, Mike.
Are you ready to back up Rodgers in New York?
Please.
Wilson?
Hey, what I want to know from Patrick, how much is redneck Mr. Wilson, Mr. Donald Trump, what is he getting ready to do right now? Because his mama, he's a Trumper. I can't wait to see that cracker.
Oh, Lord.
Well,
I shouldn't use that language. I'm sorry.
That's all right. That's being nice for me. three quarters, no, 90% NFL is a Trump supporter. So, you know, what do you expect?
Jerry Trump and Danny Sun leading the parade.
Hey, man. Because you know why he's his boy? That tax break made him 30% richer all across the country, all across the league. That's why. That poor fellow got about 15 pages longer once Trump gave him that tax break. Shucks.
Yeah, hey, getting a $250 million yacht and then getting a $190 million yacht, but we can't afford to pay Mr. Jackson. Freaking real.
Yeah, you ain't wrong. You ain't wrong.
Tiffany,
you're not wrong. Yeah, it is if you're one of them.
Tiffany, not easy.
Well, you know, that is something to consider. You know, Jackson should get his money, but he won't get his money. Is it because his mom is writing his contracts for him, or is it because they don't think he can go any farther?
I forgot the year. I forgot the year top of my head. But it boils down to this. No matter what was going to happen, the NFL colluded. I forgot it was in 1960, so I don't want to give it the wrong year. But the end result was the NFL colluded. The owners colluded that we are not guaranteeing contracts. And when Haslam broke that, NFLs were pissed. But you know something? You have to keep in mind, they might have been pissed. And particularly at the number that Watson got. But I keep reminding you, he wasn't the only one that was going to get him. Somebody was going to give him that money. They might not have said it at the time, but somebody was going to give Watson that money. Well, the ones that didn't get him now are telling him, well, you can't guarantee contracts of that size. Yes, you can.
Exactly.
So much of it is if you won't, they can't.
Right. Hey, Patrick, do you really think if Jackson had an agent, he would be going through all this? Really, I think if he had an agent, he'd have got shortchanged Because he might have got the same time the Buffalo Bills got his contract. He might have been shortchanged.
I think you're right. Patrick bopped out for a second, but he's on his way back. But that's a good question to ask.
Professor's the money, man. What do you think, Professor? Do everybody need to have an agent or is this out of LeBron?
Listen. If his mother is his agent and she knows what she's doing, she's his agent.
Yeah.
God bless him.
Amen. Hey, man. Okay. They got advisors. He got advisors. They got advisors.
It takes somebody like the NFL to, you know, they'll say, well, he's not properly represented. Well, first of all, if you understand what the qualifications of being an agent is in most states, you're underrepresented in most cases anyway, unless you've got a bona fide lawyer and or an accountant, a la CPA, and or other business, you know, true business advisors.
Right.
LeBron is one of the few who got somebody he knew beforehand that didn't know what they were doing, that learned to do what was needed, and who can go out and negotiate for him. Otherwise, most of these other guys, I mean, in recent years, you had to do a little more than hang out a shingle, but I've been around some people who, you know, just luckily got out with their shirt and their life when it comes to some of their dealing with their so-called agents.
But you know, there's got to be some reticence with that because, you know, in Park Avenue, they said, we can't let his mama sit here and decide how much money he's going to get. Did he say, like, it'd be like,
yes, you can.
You play a ball out in the street. Don't you hurt my baby? No. They can't allow that to happen. She's going to have to spread some kind of way in order for Jackson to get his money.
There's some legitimacy to that, Mike, in conjunction with how they think it should be constructed or approached.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
All these positions have slots. Now, early this evening, I got a 64-page piece on all the free agents, NFL free agents, and all of them, for the most part, they're slotted within the cap number which they have. Based upon your position, things have changed, particularly the quarterback position. Like for instance. Kirk Cousins restructures his contract to give $16,000 more for the players. Big deal.
Yeah. Kirk is the biggest quarterback in the league.
$16,000.
And he made more money than anybody. Cousin Kirk.
Thank you.
Another player
robbed everybody.
Please. And she should go to jail for it. They're slotting money right now for the rookies because they know, and the biggest reason that they're slotting money related to quarterbacks because they know what's coming. What's coming is Joe Burrow. What's coming in white boy out in California.
For the Chargers. Yeah, for the Chargers.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Just
well, they got
A-Bear.
And A-Bear. That's it. They got to adjust for that because they might get as close as guaranteed as possible. We'll see. But that's the trick with Jackson is the fact that also, let's throw this in. Let's be real, guys. Let's be real. The model for quarterbacks in terms of how they sell the league don't look like.
They got a problem. Okay, they got a problem. They got more and more black quarterbacks. They got a problem.
Aver
is good, but he ain't that good. Aaron Rodgers is an old man. He's going to be out in 2 years.
the kid from Jacksonville, he gonna get paid, even though he ain't done nothing yet. He gonna get paid. But again, guys, what I'm saying is the imagery. The imagery of Lamar Jackson in conjunction with what he wants is a problem.
They don't want to see guys to do anything, right? They don't.
Hey, Patrick, are they holding the Crown Act against Jackson?
might be. And I'm going to tell you another reason why what I'm saying has validity based upon what I know, particularly the people I know who are involved in the marketing of the league. How many, look at this way, how many endorsements that Lamar Jackson got?
None, as far as I know.
There you go.
Zero.
Because he's not still in the league. His play might still be on Sunday, but after the game is over, how many endorsements does he have?
Hey, he doesn't have the look. He doesn't have the Wall Street look. The
there you go.
And being of dark complexion don't help either.
Tell me
I'm wrong.
There you go.
No, y'all cooking. Next thing you're going to say, you should have braids.
That's why it's about the Crown Act. I tell you, it's the Crown Act holding them back.
Yep.
The Crown Act is holding them back.
Yep.
Good job,
now,
Professor.
Listen.
You got Philadelphia. What are they going to do? What are they going to do with Patrick Mahomes? They got a problem.
Mahomes is different. Yeah. They can sell that. They can't sell
it. Oh, yeah.
Lamar.
He light-skinned it.
Not only light-skinned, his personality sells it. I'm going to segue to a perfect example of what we're talking about at a different league. You and I know, I talked about last week about your friend and mine, Ja Morant. All right? You gave him an 8-game suspension. Last week when I did the Big East last week, and I got around some basketball people that I hadn't seen in a while. By the way, that's off the record. I've been coming to Big East for almost 30 years, man, and it was kind of melancholy last week. And why was melancholy? Mike, you can relate this because you've been around that circle in the tri-state area. There was a time when I went to the Big East. Covering the Big East, there are 15, 16 black reporters. And there was a core of us who used to meet every year at Big East, which was like a party for us. And it was great. They were very good. And made the experience of reporting on the game much better. Sadly.
True.
I did last week. Ain't but two of us left. Not because of people have retired, a couple of brothers have passed. But brothers ain't getting into the press box no more. It's beginning to get real, real sad. They got a couple of guys from the major networks, but there used to be a lot of independent reporters there where they can get and do great stories. That's virtually been cut out. You don't see them.
Yep.
Just off the record. But that's going on. That's off the record. But get back to Ja. This is what happened. I found some guys who I know and some white guys who I know that work with the network. Reason why Ja got that 8-game or just 8-game? Ja pissed off some boys on Park Avenue.
No shit.
Here's why. I mentioned last week.
Yo, you there, Patrick? People know Patrick Gray is still the beans.
Yeah. Someone stop Patrick from telling the truth. But you know, he'll be on his way back.
Way to go, Mike. You got the brother in trouble again. Way to go, Mike.
How about that, Mike? I got a problem with your headset. But he caused.
Oh, we thought they got you, Patrick.
No. Let me take a deep breath. He cost them boys at Park Avenue millions. You know about the shoe deal with Nike. All right? You know about the thing with Gatorade. Here's what happens. When the Gatorade, between the two, that was about close to $350 million extra money. That was for Ja. But here's what happens. For instance, if you were the team, obviously when you're in the NBA, that Gatorade money is attached to every team's in terms of selling particular packages, in terms of how they advertise and promote the team. Each team gets something from that. Each team gets something from that. So when you send that bill, that money across the board, you got problems. And here's what happened. Now, everybody think Adam Silver soft. Don't you believe that? Because who put Adam Silver in that position? A gentleman named David Stern. David Stern was a guy.
Yeah.
I don't care. Nope. Don't let that smile fool you. I've been around the guy. Nice guy, but you did not mess with him. Now, I told you what happened last week when David Stern talked to Carmelo Anthony and changed Carmelo's answers around. Well, somebody got the job. Them boys on Park Avenue said, "You messing with money," and they got to him. So it went from AJ. So now he
so that's why he's asking for the rehabbing. They should have
rehab.
And
guess what? Here's where this rehab
ain't got
from.
Shit on these people.
Do you know what he's rehabbing from? Getting away from them niggas. That's what I was told in point blank. Somebody I know, who's a brother that works. Getting away from because he has to. He has to. Because he's costing the league too much money for him to be in jail. And that young
man, I believe.
His parents, too, and particularly his daddy, of course, his daddy is hanging out with his son to protect him, but hanging with them right in the middle of that stuff. That's another reason they got that 18 split. That was told to me.
Yeah. I believe that. That would never happen.
I believe it too.
With LeBron James, because LeBron James is, say it with me, the cash cow.
Don't know nothing. I've been dying to say that.
I'm sure.
That's right.
Damn shit. Sure.
Boy, pimping ain't easy, boy. That's all I got to say.
And it's a shame. It's a shame when you have that position to be the face of the league. So everything.
Yep.
That is every low. You got to be not just make money for everybody. You got to be in your own personal P's and Q's.
Yep.
You know,
Mike, and just life in general, you know, we've all been told that some of them people that came up with you can't stay with you because they ride you wherever you go. And they will cost you more in the long run than just losing their friendship.
There you go.
And that's life. You know, my aunt used to tell me, get on my case about hanging around with her son. And he was notorious. He would be the one that, okay, well, let's go. Well, I don't want to go. This is not a good environment. I don't care. And then he never saw too many fights he backed away from. And the unfortunate thing is, a lot of times he picked fights. And you know. I have a short temper, my goodness. I don't be get foolish with it, but a lot of times you see these guys who are in these who have made it. All them people that tell you that you know you're not down with us no more. Sometimes you have to go out and be right.
You know, friend. And you and I have been long around. One of the differences between now
and in terms of its nuance, what we're talking about, they got too many young brothers trying to impress their boys. Man,
right.
Please. Come on. Jeff, what is that? You know, you see a time when, you know, we want you to do something because we see that you're doing something. But they're acting stupid and you got to act stupid? Come on, man.
Yep. There
well,
you go.
Hey, Patrick. I've been listening to some things about the rappers and you know, this thing they call having a beef with somebody.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't that some of the dumbest crap you ever seen or heard in your life?
Lord have mercy. A beef.
A beef. You know, I'm from the farm. A beef is something that happened, you got now.
Not personal. But a beef.
That is funny.
You know,
it's true.
It's you know, and you know, you look at people like the guy that got killed. He was a rapper, and you know, and I'm listening to these guys talk about the beef between Tupac and Biggie, Tupac and Sean John, and all that
mm-hmm.
whole.
That whole
mm-hmm. You know, I'm thinking, how many billions have them fools cost each other?
Yeah,
over beef. Yeah. You know, because like the thing, if it's gonna be a beef with me, I gotta see full legs and some tits. You gotta get a mm-hmm. Otherwise, it don't make no sense to me.
If it's a beef with me, mm-hmm. I gotta see some gravy and some small potatoes. Now, I don't worry about the other shit. I can get my own girl, but the damn beef, it better be real and it better be
100% correct. 100% correct, Fritz. 100%. 100%. 100% correct.
You know, I beef with Reggie, but, he know I came out to beat the hell out of him. Come September.
And the trick is, you know, what a lot of people need to see, there was a thing on the History Channel concerning how they built the country with Vanderbilt and J.P. Morgan and all these guys.
Now,
it was excellent. Now they didn't like each other, but you know something they did? We ain't messing with the money. They stuck together.
One of them old mob movies had this line they kept repeating, but you can't play with the money, you can't mess with the money.
Mm-hmm.
And even in Harlem Nights. Some of the stuff they talk about there, you know, the beef, you know, put the friction aside. Let's make the money. They were able to do what they say would normally say be impossible. They took the white folks for a whole lot for gugobs of money, and they got away with it. Why? Because they had parties that were not necessarily friends, but they got along enough to get the money, get it divided, and they went their separate ways.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the trick about it, the attitude.
Like Godfather Harlem.
What John does, you think the owners don't do the same thing? But you just don't see it. I mean,
you never know.
When I worked on the street, the company I worked with was J.W. Charles. Their main headquarters was in Boca Raton. Boca Raton is one of the richest cities in the country, in Florida. Now, I got invited down there one time, but I didn't go. But the partner of the firm went. And the stuff that he did, he said went on. You think the picture Wolf on Wall Street was something? That's a lamb compared to what they do. But
that's
you
right.
Don't see it. All our folks would have wanted to put What made you put it on social media and think it wasn't going to be seen? You know, you got to be smarter than that.
It's always something.
Well, see what you forget. See what you forget, Patrick, is all them people that read that stuff for you, that you put on social media, those are your real friends.
Mm-hmm. And Fred, his father was in the party when his father would say, turn them cameras off. Turn the cameras off. Put the phones on.
That reminds me of the first Super Bowl I went to and the commissioner's party. Now, the commissioner's party is held Friday night. And, of course, the state of the NFL, the stock meeting, which you could say, is held that mm-hmm. day. But Friday night, it was like everything was laid out there. I mean, everything that you wanted, and I mean mm-hmm. everything, was mm-hmm. there. And it was on full display. Nobody was going to mess with it. If you wanted to indulge, you indulged. And they had a group of rooms for the guys to go and get their dick sucked.
Mm-hmm.
How do I know this? I turned down an opportunity because I didn't have $50. But then again, I didn't want to pay $50 to get my dick sucked. That was the press breaks. They had a whole room, a bunch of rooms. This is in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And this is after they left Arizona. So what
mm-hmm.
they had in mind, I don't know where they would have did it in Arizona, but it would have been done there too. They make serious money. I mean, this is beyond goo and gob. This is serious money. They can control what they want. And God only knows what's going to happen when they get to Vegas for Super Bowl, was it?
Oh, it's going to be a crazy out of Vegas.
And Mike, let me add this, Mike.
Yep.
When they got the information, and now they've been known, at least for a year and a half, this stuff was going on. Told you, the
right.
NFL knew everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, NBA knew everything.
That's
now,
right.
what? This is why you got to keep away from dumb niggas and the hoes. Now, if I'm Josh Boy, and this is grossly what one of the things that happens, I'm Josh Boy, right? You know what they
yep.
do. So you know, all around there got a whole bunch of hoes that were trying to get the job or some of their boys. Now, who do you think is providing all the secrets? The woman that's fucking his boys, telling people from the NBA what's going on.
Yep.
They don't know that. If I'm Josh Boy, I can get a job. Well, I'm going to mess with one of his boys. So, he going to flash like he doing something. He going to run his mouth. You think they ain't going back? You think somebody, woman on, paid to do that? Get out of here. And the reason, how do I know? But there's a guy that was a detective around Ohio, around the Mets when I worked with him, because they had to watch Derek Coleman and Kenny Anderson, because Kenny was like going crazy. Kenny
there
made catches. All right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I met the brother. Matter of fact, the brother went from the Nets. He handled the NFL's security for a while. But he didn't
mm-hmm.
tell me specifics, but he intimated what was going on. This was 25 years ago when I worked in the NBA. You think it ain't going now with the money even more? Because they're stupid. They don't understand what's going on. You
yeah.
know, I've had women trying to fuck me, trying to fuck Jason Williams. Or try to get Derek Coleman. I mean, come on, girl. You crazy? You think they ain't going
to find
out?
Step up.
Mm-hmm. Stop. And, you know, and these boys just fall right into it. I got to impress my boys. Now I'm in rehab to get my head together.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Adam Silver said, go to rehab if you want to stay in the league. That's what he told me.
Well, as we come to the final thought, we're sitting there wondering, what does it take? You know, Eldridge Dickey, the Lord's Prayer, believed that all you had to do was play and be better at your position, and that was enough. But he found out just because you're better doesn't mean you win.
Mm-hmm.
He clearly outplayed. He clearly outplayed the number two guy, Stabler. But Stabler started. Why? He fit the script. Stabler was what they were looking for. He represented the firm. He was a company man. Eldridge Dickey didn't know what hit him. It wasn't as simple as playing on the field. Is playing off the field, in the boardroom, all these things. these are some things that we're not prepared for because we're not even thinking about it because we're too busy getting caught up in the wash from what has already happened. It's past us. And because it's past us, you never catch up. Reggie, please start us off.
All I can say is it's been a crazy week. We had here in Richmond, Virginia, 7 deputies, all black, including the female, were charged with murder a black man going to Central State.
Oh, shit.
Once again, mental illness comes. And this is a European woman who's a Commonwealth attorney, and I met her before. And she was down here with Roland Martin when we had the community outrage about what's happening in jail. White girl don't play. She coming with charges. She got her eyes dotted and her T's crossed. And for the Commonwealth attorneys to come after deputies, she's putting her neck on the line. She got to be having her shit together. Benjamin Crump stays busier than the NFL owners when it comes to trading and selling teams. Every time we look, there's a different case comes up. The sad thing about it, as the professor always tells us, we got to read more books because they're doing anything and everything they can to wash away our history. Thank you, Patrick, for coming on each and every week because when I get these white boys information I know from you, they're in shock. How did a nigga know this? We got to keep those things going because as long as we pass the information out, we got to keep these people shaking. And Texas Southern, I don't know what the hell happened to them tonight, but they got that ass whooped.
Can't shoot.
They got a paycheck. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Way to go.
It helped out. Scoop got some publicity. Yep. Scoop got some publicity, man.
Picked up pennies.
Yeah. Just food for thought.
Just food for thought. Patrick.
I've been two better Tonys in the round right now. I've been watching the World Series for sports. I mean, the World Baseball Classic, which I think is interesting. But somebody came up with an interesting idea, and that was, what if the United States field of black American teams? Who would make the cut? All black ball players. And I said, that was real interesting. So I went and did some look up on it, and I came up with some people who they thought could fit the bill. And it's interesting because I think it would work out. Now, your infielders would be Tim Anderson, Josh Bell, J.P. Crawford, Kim Bryant Hayes, Aaron Judge, and Marcus Stidham.
Right.
That'd be your infielders. I could deal with that. It would kind of shake up the league. Now, the outfielders would be Mookie Betts, Michael Bradley, Byron Buxton, Billy Hamilton, Michael Harris the second, Cedric Mullins, and Giancarlo Stanton. That's a hell of an outfield.
Nice,
you ain't striking nobody, and it keeps going. Now, I thought about the pitchers. Now, for the pitchers, they have Joshua Gray, Hunter Green, Taylor Hearn, and Tristan, what's the guy's name? Tristan McKenzie. All right. And for relievers, they have Amir Grant, Carl Edwards the second, Chris Archer, I think is a good young pitcher, Justin Dunn, Devin Williams, Art. I don't know what this guy is. Art Warren, Dwayne Underwood, who I whole thing is really good. Dave Price, who's just about ready to retire, Kumar Rocker, Tail Bradley, and Jerron Brown. That'd be a nice team.
Yeah.
It'd be real interesting.
That would be interesting. Damn. I'd pay to see that myself.
I don't lie, that's two of us.
No kidding. Well, that stuff be worth rolling around the cerebellum about. Fred.
Yes, sir.
Come on, put something in the spot.
This has been an interesting week, and you know I'm making progress on the project on George Williams, the former coach at St. Aug. Among the things that I'm finding interesting, though, is how well known this man was, and how well he epitomizes a guy who understands that he stands on the shoulders of other giants, which makes, which help him to do the kind of things he did. And, you know, it's amazing that this whole Olympic movement and the contribution of blacks is so underserved and and we're so underinformed about it. So that's what we're going to be doing over the next 90 to 120 days is getting all that put together. And this will be the track and field portion of the sports encyclopedia, which will be the fourth sport that we've actually covered. And I think I've told y'all before that we're not going to do baseball because baseball is being done by a group called Black Line, and they have they have done the research. There's no need. It would be a waste of my time trying to do anything that equals or better than what the stuff that I know they've done already. So we're going to keep moving on. You can get in touch with us at blackherreview.com. You can buy books, whether it's Hotel from the City of Fayetteville, North Carolina, Sports Encyclopedia covering football, women's basketball, and men's basketball, as well as Claflin College and Livingstone College.
All right.
Fred, by the way, HBO is having this All-Star game in CBS next week, HBO All-Stars.
Yeah. There's that, plus there's also another one being done by the Black Line. They deal with more of the smaller schools. But either way, they're making progress. They did a tournament last year, and they actually have a good money sponsor.
That's what you need. That's what you need.
And then there's also some baseball player is involved with another
All-Star game.
Event.
I heard something about it.
He's a retired baseball player. I want to say Willie, I don't know what Randolph or who, but I remember they were talking about it not long ago at one of our press meetings.
Interesting. All right. Well, stay tuned for that one. Gary.
Yes, sir. This is the HBCUs went 0-3 today. 0-3 today. North Texas State beat Alcorn State 59-53. Texas Southern lost to Mary Dickinson 84-51. The Lady Southern Jaguars lost to Cigar 57-47. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it is time to leave the lessons. Yeah, you got paid, but you also got embarrassed. I don't know about you guys, but I'm tired of this. It ain't even the first day of the NCAA, and three of our schools are already gone. I'm tired of it. Sunday Beauty Box. It'll be my girl. Red Night in a bit.
All right. Well,
somebody's gonna break through one day. Soon.
It's not no surprise, but you know better. You know they're designed to fail. They're set up to fail. All they care about is getting that money. We're talking over $1 billion, easy.
Mm.
And they never added all up one game at a time, but the cumulative effect is humongous. But I got to go back to what my premise was when I started the show tonight. Owens Taylor, dead, 80 years old, should be Hall of Fame. The fact that the NFL devised their own caste system where they wouldn't consider anyone with AFL credentials worthy of being considered for the Hall of Fame. I'll let my man DL finish up.
DLC Creep. So today, my wife and I are running around Lake Calabasas. It's a lake around where we live, right? And every year they give you a little plastic pass that you're supposed to keep on your keys because you can run around a lake and it's a private lake, right? So last night I ran around the lake. Security asked me for my pass. I showed him my pass. I keep running. Today that same guy asked me for my pass, asked LaDonna for her pass, and the other two black people who were out there for their pass, right? I sat, before I cast judgment, I sat and watched, you know, to see if he gave, he in fact checked everybody's passes. He did not.
Mm.
Sometimes it is what you think it is. Sometimes it's just somebody doing something. Sometimes they're profiling you. Sometimes they're doing something with race involved. Sometimes it's not. I don't want to jump to conclusions, but I knew for a fact that he, in fact, stopped all black people on there and did not stop yet. So I called and I complained, and it really led me to this. There are sometimes when things happen and you just can't ascribe it to race. They are just things that happen, and they look unfortunate, and obviously you may feel a particular way, but sometimes things aren't what they'd be. But sometimes they are, which is exactly why I am telling you I am boycotting the NFL. I'm not going to tell anybody else what to do. I'm not going to tell them why or, you know, what they have to do or what's right or what's wrong, because I believe that regardless of their frustrations, regardless of what they're saying, that it is race all through it. I'm telling you. Some people got mad that this black man stood up and said some things because black men were getting killed, and sponsors reacted to it, and Americans in general. Some Americans in general reacted to it. I mean, there were some famous Americans. I'll never watch football if this guy plays. I won't watch it until he gets a fair opportunity. You could say fair in America, and somebody thinks that you can say the cuss word. Fair means that a guy who has exhibited at least the talent of many of the secondary, second string quarterbacks that they bought on have, at least that. He at least deserves the opportunity. And you can tell me it's not about race. Just like the guy looking at my pass and the other black guys, the other black people's pass was about race. Sometimes it is, and this time it is. And I will not watch myself personally until this guy gets an opportunity to pursue his profession. Because he's good enough to do it. If all things being equal, he would be on somebody's team right now. All things being equal, this wouldn't be happening. But some people in the sponsorship world, some people, you know, some owners have said, I don't want this to happen, and this is a bad light. And what is more American than somebody protesting something in a peaceful way? But sometimes, like I said, it isn't racially motivated. Sometimes it is. I am boycotting because in my heart of hearts, I believe it is. I believe they're doing this to him because he saw something they didn't like, and they're trying to keep that black guy in check. I believe it. Just like I believe that guy pulled all the passes, and I believe he had the motivations where we were black and we look out of place. I believe it. Now, I'm boycotting the NFL for my own personal edification. It's the way I feel. I would not feel comfortable watching it. Plus, I'm a Rams fan, so I'm not sure I've been watching football for the last 20 years. Let's face it, they don't even do a sports report for the Rams. They just come on, y'all know what happened, and in other news. But I think that for me, I will not watch football myself until this man, Colin Kaepernick, is given a fair opportunity to pursue his dream. He didn't do anything wrong. Sometimes it's not what you think it is, and sometimes it's exactly what you think it is.
That's and yesterday, the Miami Dolphins signed the pathetic Jay Cutler to a one-year, $10 million contract. Joining us right now, ESPN's Bomani Jones. Bomani, let's just be clear. It's some scrubs, some sorry, low-down, should-not-be-playing minor league quarterbacks. The NFL is blackballing this brother.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to argue against it at this point. I think the one thing that happened with the Baltimore situation and then Miami is anybody who made it's just football argument has kind of lost that. That can't stand anymore. Even like if you didn't go to the dudes off the street that seem to be getting jobs, the dudes at the Ravens said it explicitly, basically, that this is not a football decision. They were going to call sponsors and everything else. And with Miami, it's definitely not a football decision. Like, it is clear that the protest is the reason why this young man does not have a job.
Bomani, can you recall an NFL owner calling sponsors when they hired wife beaters?
No. But see, here's the thing about that I think is interesting is the way that people perceive football players. I think they feel like when those sorts of things just happen, well, you know how football players are, right? Like they feel like you got to break some eggs in order to make an omelet. On this one, they're like, there's no excuse for doing something like this, and they're going to ride this out as absolutely far as they possibly can until somebody has a smoking gun.
The New York Giants had a kicker who admitted beating his wife repeatedly, and they still had him on the team. Ray Lewis was charged with murder. But now he thinks he's Jesus.
Yeah, no one has a leg to stand on here. And that's what I think has been most interesting is that I think that a lot of people naively believed, well, once they don't have any more excuses, somebody will be forced to give them a job. And that's not how this works. Once they don't have any more excuses, they just stop making excuses.
And keep it moving.
Yeah.
So, Bomani, I ask you this question here. Do you believe you will see an organization – activists call for black folks to boycott the NFL or other conscious folks, do you think that's going to happen?
Yes. Now, the question is whether or not there will be a follow-through on it. But, you know, J.D. Power did a survey about a week ago where they said that more respondents who said that they watched less of the NFL last year said the reason they did was the protest. Now, if you looked at that survey, it was what I call a Family Feud survey where they give you the list of answers and then people pick one from what's there. Like, that's how it appeared to be. So it seemed to be skewed in that way. We did a poll on the ESPN Radio Twitter account that had more respondents who said that they would consider a boycott of the NFL because of this. Then there were respondents in the J.D. Power poll who said that the reason they watched less football was because of the Kaepernick protest. So I had more people on this poll who made that answer than this one that wound up making all of the news, and people got mad at me for even asking the question in the first place. I do think a lot of people are going to have a matter of principle they're going to have to come up on as to whether or not they're going to keep watching the NFL if this is how it's going.
And Roland and Bomani, do you think that a pollster like a black pollster like Cornell Belcher could do a poll and really get valid response that J.D. Power would never get or would never go to those people?
No, absolutely. Like, I mean, I think there are a lot of people who are now frustrated in a way that they were not before. And I do think a lot of people like Doug Baldwin, who kind of held out hope in the more optimistic way as they could, that this would go differently. Anybody with a brain, I feel like, can see that what is going on here is an affront to all notions of meritocracy that we supposedly have in sports.
Well, the question.
So Roman, can we play the race card? Can we play the race card here? Because that's all the cards I got in my hand right now.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like somebody else.
Well,
played
and remember.
Right.
And remember, that's one of the reasons why Colin Kaepernick was protesting, because of police brutality against black folks, and not a single one of these owners has stood up and said a word about that. I wonder why.